O'Connor bought an automobile. He took his sweetheart for a ride one Sunday. Johnny was togged up in his best Sunday clothes. She nestled close to his side. Things went just dandy till he got down the road. Then something happened to the old machinery. That engine got his goat, off went his hat and coat. Everything needed repairs. He'd have to get under, get out and get under, to fix his little machine. He was just dying to cuddle his queen. But every minute, when he'd begin it, he'd have to get under, get out and get under. Then he'd get back at the wheel. A dozen times they'd start to hug and kiss, and then the darned old engine, it would miss. And then he'd have to get under, get out and get under, and fix up his automobile. Millionaire Wilson said to Johnny one day, your little sweetheart don't appreciate you. I have a daughter who is hungry for love. She likes to ride every day. Johnny had visions of a million in gold. He took her riding in his little auto. But every time that he went to say marry me, 'twas the old story again. He'd have to get under, get out and get under, to fix his little machine. He was just dying to cuddle his queen. But every minute, when he'd begin it, he'd have to get under, get out and get under. Then he'd get back at the wheel. Every time that he would reach for a kiss, it seems a darned old spark plug, it would miss. And then he'd have to get under, get out and get under, and fix up his automobile. He'd have to get under, get out and get under, to fix his little machine. He was just dying to cuddle his queen. But every minute, when he'd begin it, he'd have to get under, get out and get under. Then he'd get back at the wheel. It seems that once she sat down on his knee, and then he lost control, ran right up a tree. And then he had to get under, get out and get under, and fix up his automobile.
Good evening. Bernie Golias here, and you're listening to WOBC 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. And this is the Auto Era, and I'm the host for the show. And welcome back, everybody. I was gone for almost 2 weeks now. Last week I was in Charlotte. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that. But first about the show, if you have our first-time listeners, the Auto Air Talk Show, basically we talk a lot about the history of Cleveland-made automobiles and Northern Ohio-made automobiles and the roots and the purpose of the show is to help expose the various accomplishments of what the Cleveland and local communities had to offer during the birth of the automotive industries. So we always have discussed the various accomplishments, and many of those guests on the show over the past several months. We talked about, Winton and White and Baker Electric and Jordan and Stearns and Peerless and Templar. And as you know, Cleveland was a hotbed for the automobile industry, and over 80 various and specific and unique marks were makes. Produced during the time frame, the early turn of the century. And that's just within the city limits, 80 of them. So we've got about 115 just in Northeast Ohio, and from what I understand, there's about 540 automobile manufacturers in the whole state of Ohio during that heyday. So, interesting show. You're more than welcome to call in, talk about anything you would like, non-automotive related, that is. And the number here is 440-775-8139. Well, as I said earlier, I was in Charlotte, North Carolina last week, And that was for the Antique Automobile Club of America's auto fair. And the Hornet's Nest region was putting that on. And that was quite a show. If you've never been to the to that, there's about 9,000 vendors. Thousands and thousands of cars were there in a car corral. And AAC had a special national meet within that show, which consisted of about 350 cars. And I was able to participate as a judge. And that's something that's very unique. And if you want to experience that, you know, just look up the AACA.org website, and you're more than welcome to check all that out. But a lot of things happening this summer now that it's that car season. We get out and drive them. One very interesting show that's going on, I definitely want to mention that to you, because if you like to study history, and this show is all about Cleveland-made, Northern Ohio-made automobiles, there's going to be a special show down at the Ursuline College on June 13th. That's going to focus on Cleveland-made automobiles. So, and that's also, that's going to be put on with the AACA Northern Ohio Chapter and the Crawford Western Reserve Historical Society. So if you want to find out more about that, you're more than welcome to either check it out on the AACA web, or just to simply give the Crawford a call, or even myself, and you can call me or email me at BernieGolias@AOL.com and be more than happy to send you some information. Well, tonight's show is no different than the other shows that we put on, which means they are fantastic, and they will be highly educational, and we always want to share this information with you. One of the gentlemen that has been on this show a few times in the past has a wealth of experience, very talented guy, excellent historian, and his name's Roy Pacini. And he's been here in the past talking about everything from Bentleys and Rolls Royces and Stanley Steamers and everything else. And I know at one show in the past we had to cut it short, but today he's going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit about the Doble steam car. And that's something that he's an expert on. And, you know, like I say, the show's about Cleveland and Northern Ohio, but we talk about everything. We always, on occasion, go worldwide. So don't feel bad that you want to talk about something that hasn't been made in Cleveland, but you're more than welcome to call. And you have the number. So let's get the show on the road and welcome our guest, Roy Pacini. Welcome, Roy.
Well, thank you, Bernie. It's great to be back, and I'm happy to be able to catch up on what we tried to accomplish on the last show. The one last link in the formula is the Doble steam car. We didn't get a chance to finish up on it because time just didn't allow us to last time. It's not a Cleveland made car, but it was going to be part of the last show, which did feature the white steam car. It's important in that it was the ultimate steam car made. It was the most advanced technologically, and it was totally in a world all its own compared to everything else that preceded it. Doble was a very limited production automobile. It was made by a man who was an absolute genius, and he was one of the great standouts in the automotive world.
Was that you, Roy?
No, unfortunately, I don't have that kind of intellect. I can appreciate what they've done, though, and he was truly up there with Carl Benz and Gottlieb Daimler and, you know, Bugatti and some other people that were real true innovators in the automotive world. In the entire production, they only made about 40 automobiles. And you say, why is that so significant if they only made 40 of them? They were so advanced in their technology, and it was all basically the work of one man. He borrowed from other automotive manufacturers, such as White, and he innovated on his own. And he had a lot of great ideas that really pushed things forward. Unfortunately, the timing of his production kind of killed it off, because steam was already going by the wayside at the time he actually started any kind of production that would be considered, you know, viable. He was born about 1894, and even as a child had interest in steam technology. And his family owned a company that made and sold mining tools out in California. And it was called the Abner Doble Company. And it was named after his grandfather, but his name was Abner as well. And he actually started working at the young age of 8 and made his first steam car when he was in high school. And he salvaged a locomobile steam car boiler and an old scrap white chassis. And he designed his own engine, which his family machine shop built. And he put the thing on the road, and it ran. And between him and his four brothers, they made a viable automobile, which was the foundation of the whole enterprise. He went off to MIT in 1910, and at that point started studying engineering. And he made the contact of a lifetime in that he got to know the Stanley brothers at age 16 of Stanley Steamer fame. And the one problem the steam automobile had versus the gasoline internal combustion engine was that, you know, it took a long time to start, and it was very difficult to get going in cold weather. And you also expended a lot of steam, plumes of steam, out the exhaust pipe. And Doble felt that it was very important that steam cars be made to conserve steam and reuse the steam rather than just exhaust it to the atmosphere. And he also felt that the paramount thing that they should do is hasten the starting procedure. And a Stanley steamer could take 20 minutes, and on a cold day, maybe even longer to start, because you're basically boiling, you know, 10, 15, 20 gallons of water, depending upon the size of the boiler, from scratch. And it was a big locomotive boiler, what they called a fire tube boiler, which was essentially an upright can with a bunch of pipes going through it that opened on both ends of the can and allowed flames to go up through the water to heat it. And it took a long time to do that. Well, the white steam car made here in Cleveland used a what they call water tube boiler, in which water was injected into a coil of iron pipe that basically looked like a coiled up garden hose, only much bigger. And it was only a small volume of water at any given time, and it was heated with a burner on the bottom, and it produced steam in limited quantities, but with great power and constant availability, because it was constantly being injected. You never ran low on steam pressure. Stanleys were notorious that they'd build up a head of steam and run through it when they were driving along, and they the steam pressure would drop, and it would take a while for, you know, more water to be boiled off.
One question for the audience.
Yes.
And for myself. I mean, I understand, you know, I see the Stanley steamers and the white steamers and everything else. You know, these, you know, if you're a plumber, that's it's you're in heaven.
Yes.
And if you're dealing with maybe if you're a furnace repairman, you're also in heaven. But a lot of these cars, I mean, you had chauffeurs that knew what they were doing. Don't you know, I guess they were somewhat simplistic in a sense of maybe that they had less as far as maintenance or operational mechanical elements.
The engine.
The engine. But they were very, very volatile machines, especially if you, you know, I mean, you can very easily start one on fire.
Oh, yes.
I mean, you know, you have to get these boilers going. You have a flame. You have an open flame underneath you. And, you know, historically, you read a lot about these steam cars. They were blowing up. The
boiler
pressure was
sure.
I mean, everything. Well, even gasoline cars, but you know, because they usually had the gas tanks right by the motor, but which was kind of silly, but it's understandable because they had to have a gravity feed type of thing, and they wanted to come down. But you know, paint a picture for everybody here with a steam car.
Okay.
Paint a picture of how someone would have to, you know,
get them going.
Get it going, light it up, and practically had to have a blowtorch. Picture yourself out there when it's snowing or whatever, and trying to light this thing underneath there and building up steam. I mean, paint a picture. I mean,
which is why we drive internal combustion engines today for the most part. yes, everything you said is quite true, especially with the Stanleys. And the the funny thing is the greatest survival rate of all the cars were amongst the Stanleys, which were some of the most dangerous and the most volatile. But people liked them and they saved them for some reason or another. But the vast majority of steam cars went to the scrapper, basically because they were very difficult to start. You'd go out there on a cold morning and you'd have to start. Hopefully you had a pilot light on the water tank all night long to keep the water from freezing. And then presuming you have liquid water in the tank and you're able to charge the boiler with water, first you had to start a pilot light, which was essentially a torch. And if you want to see what that's like, go to Jay Leno's website, jaylenosgarage.com, or you could get it on YouTube and watch him start a Stanley steamer where there was a gas pocket that collected from this torch underneath the car, and he goes to ignite it, and this huge rolling ball of flame comes out and engulfs him and takes off his eyebrows. it's a wonderful video, and I'm sure he'll remember it till the day he dies. But that was typical of that type of technology. Now remember, we're talking Stanley's 1896 to about 1915 before they got a little bit more advanced, and Stanley never got real far along. They wanted to keep things the way it was because in their mind it worked. But you'd go out there and you'd light this thing, and you'd get the burners going under the boiler, and you'd sit there for 20 minutes freezing while your wife was inside looking at her watch saying, we got to go to dinner. And you're out there hopefully getting enough steam up to start. And then once you did get started, you hoped that everything stayed lit and you were able to progress along and build up a big enough head of steam to go. But that was the Stanley technology. White from Cleveland had a different idea, which was the water tube boiler, which was much more efficient. You'd start the burner. You also had burners. I mean, this was the same sort of setup. You went out there and you lit something underneath the car with a match, and it heated things up. But a white would start up in a few minutes. You'd have a burner underneath this coiled what they called a generator. They called it a steam generator. It was really a boiler, but they wanted to separate it from the notion of a Stanley's boiler. And it would heat this thing up in relatively short term. And in 5-6 minutes max, you'd be off under a head of steam, and it was much safer, because if you were in a collision with this vehicle, the white would not blow up. At most, you'd lose a pint or two of steam, and nobody'd get scalded. A Stanley, you had 20 gallons of boiling water that would be spraying everywhere, vaporizing into clouds of steam. Stanleys were, they're very cute cars, and people in the hobby love them, but you don't want to be in an accident with a Stanley, just like a locomotive, because a Stanley's boiler is a locomotive-style boiler, although it's upright as opposed to horizontal. It has the same technology as an 1860 steam train, and you get in a collision, you got a big explosion.
Well, that's very interesting. We're going to continue our conversation on the steam cars, and especially tonight on Doble, just wanted to have a station ID here, and this is WOBC 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio, and I'm Bernie Golias, your host to the Auto Aaron, and tonight's guest is Roy Pacini. So if you want to call and ask any questions to Roy, please dial 440-775-8139. The phone lines are open. Sometimes they do get jammed up, so be patient, please. And right back here is Roy Pacini.
Okay. Following up on that idea of the boilers and safety, there was a man in France by the name of Leon Serpollet that actually pioneered the use of water tube boilers in automobiles. And Rollin White went over and studied under him, and he came back and designed this steam generator. Well, Doble liked White's idea, and White went out of the steam car business in 1912, and they were done. They went over strictly toward internal combustion manufacture, and Doble had a passion for steam, and he actually left MIT and he started his own company, the first of three companies in which he produced cars. He and his three brothers started this company. It was in Massachusetts, and he called it the Abner Doble Motor Vehicle Company. And they produced their first car. They only made a couple of what they called Model B. It was a two-cylinder. It was a single expansion engine as opposed to a compound engine. You'd only use the steam once and it'd be exhausted. It was a double-acting, which meant that it had an impulse. Every time the piston moved, it was generating power. It was transmitting power. I shouldn't say generating. It was transmitting power. And it generated about 75 horsepower and had a lot of torque, and it was geared, the engine was geared directly, as most steam cars were, to the rear axle. They didn't need any kind of transmission because of this extreme torque that a steam engine produces. And it was quite innovative at the time. It had a condenser on it, which was one of the things that he tried to convince the Stanley brothers to adopt, and they refused to adopt it. And White had a condenser in 1902, but Stanley didn't adopt it till they got proven wrong. And Doble was the man that actually put the notion in their head to do it. He drove back and forth in front of Stanley's offices, parading his steam car that was not emitting any exhaust, and he did it all day long. This is when he was a teenager, and he wanted them to adopt the condenser, and they took note of it. It took another 10 years or so before they actually adopted. Well, I should say 6 or 7 years before they actually adopted it. But when Doble made his first car, he was off and running. All he needed was financial support. And he met up with a fella by the name of C.L. Lewis, and he moved his company to Detroit. Basically, he folded up his original company and moved to Detroit and founded a company called General Engineering Company. And he made a new model that was more advanced. It had what he decided was a more efficient engine. It was called a Uniflow style engine, in which the gas comes in through a valve, but it's exhausted through a port like a two-cycle engine does. There's no exhaust valve. It just goes out of port, and it's dispersed, and it conserves heat. The cylinder itself doesn't cool down. You don't get condensation. He felt that was a good way of doing it, and he started taking orders for these cars, and he made a few of them. He made actually quite a number of them up until World War II started taking its toll on the steel supply. They ran out of steel. Pardon me? They ran out of steel, and they ended up having to close that company down because they were unable to produce and meet the orders, and finances once again did them in. He was an engineer and a scientist. He wasn't a businessman, and that was the big plague of so many people that had great ideas. They excelled in one area of pursuit, but business always took them down. There was always smarter people than people that would snooker them into deals and other people that would have stock transactions that would force people into bankruptcy. And people were forced to be an engineer and a businessman, and it didn't often work out. And in Doble's case, it didn't. And it was really, the end of the line for him eventually. But they made a number of these what they called Detroit Dobles. They were a different type of generator than the original one that he designed. This one was a more efficient one. It produced about 600 pounds per square inch at about 450 degrees Fahrenheit, and there were about 150 square feet of surface area on the boiler. So it was a good sized boiler, and it was pressure tested to several times the explosion rate, just for safety purposes. And it would go 75 miles an hour without a problem in a day when Fords were capable of doing 40 to 50 at the most. So it was quite a good car at the time.
Well, also keep in mind too that like you said earlier, that the steam car did not necessarily have to have a transmission or a drive shaft, and as we know it, a lot of extra momentum that had to be energy had to be used to push this. You said 75 miles an hour. That's 0 to 75 miles an hour in probably about 10 seconds. Steam cars and electric cars were probably the fastest thing on earth at the time, and of course I believe they can go well over 100-120 miles an hour.
Yeah, the later model Dobles would do 120. The later Dobles, which we'll get to eventually, were equivalent to a Duesenberg as far as power. They were at the ultimate end of the spectrum. They were way in the outer stratosphere for the time.
And price.
Oh yeah, yeah. Duesenbergs and Dobles had that in common. They were very comparably priced.
Well, let's take it's halfway through the show already. We'll take a little break here, and we'll go back to Roy Pacini and talk about Doble steam cars. And again, you're listening to the Auto Era, and this is WOBC Oberlin 91.5 FM, Oberlin College, and Community Radio, and I'm your host, Bernie Golias. So let's put on a special tune here that I think would be appropriate for the show.
Get your veil and get your duster. Get the yen for goggles when the wind's a guster.
Keep your Hubbard gown firmly belted down when you're out in your Stanley steamer.
In a gale we never fluster, 'cause we're told we get that old familiar luster.
If you're dressed in style, everyone will smile when you're out in your Stanley steamer. Honk! Honk, 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 honk.
The donkey used to have his charm, but he's looking at us with alarm.
For it looks like he's back to the farm.
But if you fail with your combustor, then your speed is gonna need a new adjuster.
And you must be
just the one we trust,
or we won't step inside.
No, we won't take the ride
that you plan in your Stanley steamer.
That you plan in your Stanley steamer.
In your Stanley steamer automobile. Chug, 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 chug. That flat tire was so unexpected.
There she sat alone and ejected.
I started to sigh, then I caught the eye of the man in the Stanley steamer.
It began to rain when along the lane
came the man in the Stanley steamer.
He was a sight to make me tingle, and a dish to make me glad that I was single. He proposed a ride, so I hopped inside, and away we started in the Stanley steamer.
It was not that she was stupid, nor the shot she thought she got from Mr. Cupid.
I just lost my heart from the very start to the man in the Stanley steamer.
Honk, 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 honk.
The tandem bike has had its day. If you're riding one, you'll find that they
poke along in an obsolete way. We're full of pride and anticipation, like a child with a wild imagination.
And we
wanna ride inside
of the latest motor deal.
Wanna sit behind the wheel with the man in the Stanley steamer.
With the man in the Stanley steamer. I'm a nothing but a dreamer in your Stanley steamer. Stanley steamer automobile.
Welcome back. Bernie Golias here. You're listening to The Auto Era, and this is WOBC 91.5 FM, Oberlin College and Community Radio. And tonight we have Roy Pacini on, a guest, a very well-known historian and collector, past collector that is, and he's talking tonight about the Doble steam car and a few other things that we're throwing in as well. So welcome back to the show, Roy.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much. You know, we were talking about the convenience of a automobile and what, you know, made the gasoline car take over as opposed to the steam car. That was something that was paramount in the mind of Abner Doble. It was convenience and ease of use, and, you know, make the automobile attractive for people to get in and start up. And what he came up with was what he referred to as the Doble system. And this is where his genius really came through. Everybody else in the entire world, and there were a couple of hundred different makes of steam automobiles throughout the world, everybody else had a burner and a boiler. And served the purpose, but it took forever and it to heat up. And he wanted something that was instant go, instant right now, satisfaction, get in it and drive it. And what he came up with was an idea that borrowed from the internal combustion engine. He took the gasoline or kerosene or fuel oil. You could use anything you wanted to heat it. And instead of using a burner, he used a Venturi-style carburetor to atomize it. And what he did was he had a Scirocco blower behind it, and he blew air and atomized gasoline mixture into a container that contained the boiler tubes, and it was atomized, and it was fire engulfing every square inch of surface area of the boiler instantly at all times. Instead of just heating it from the bottom where heat rises, this thing was truly hell on earth. It was instant 3,000 degree or better flame right on the boiler, which gave instant heat to the tubes, and within 2 minutes, 2 to 2.5 minutes, you could go from a cold start to a running automobile, and in 31 seconds, they could actually have the car up to 40 miles an hour from a dead cold start. And I'm talking about, you know, room temperature. I'm not talking about frozen. I'm talking about room temperature. Just go out there and start it and drive away, which, you know, it's quite a feat. And if you ever watch Jay Leno's videos, he actually gets going within about a minute and a half, 2 minutes, and he's up and running. So I mean, it does work. And part of the Doble system was electronic ignition. Instead of getting out and lighting a boiler with a torch and watching all the flames go up and all this, you got in a Doble and you turned a key, and guess what? A spark plug lit the gas and air mixture inside the boiler compartment, inside the shroud, and you never had to light anything. The key was turned, it starts up. And the boiler, once started with the ignition, the boiler would turn on and turn off according to a thermostatic control that was done with a metal diaphragm and quartz rods that would expand at a given rate, and it was predictable rate. And at certain temperatures, they would shrink, and you'd have the thing kick back on, and when it expand, it would kick it off because it was too hot, and it worked really well. And today you'd have it done electronically with all kind of injectors and what have you, but for the 19 teens, it was actually quite innovative. So you had instant startup, you had electronic ignition, and you had a car that had all the power in the world. And once again, you know, their second company, the General Engineering Company in Detroit, which made the Doble Detroit or Detroit Doble, that folded because of finances and lack of steel from World War One, and they ended up moving out to California, where his roots really were. And in Atascadero, California, he set up the final generation of the Doble Company, which was Doble Steam Motors Incorporated. And he came up with a totally new engine. He abandoned the Uniflow engine, which functioned quite well, but he came up with a version of it's a four-cylinder compound engine. And when I say compound, you've got the same steam being used twice. So you have a high-pressure cylinder and a low-pressure cylinder. The high-pressure cylinder gets the fresh steam, and it expands and it pushes it down. And when it's exhausted into the second cylinder, which is the low-pressure cylinder, which has a little bit bigger diameter to give more surface area to push, and that uses the same steam a second time, so it's more economical on steam. And because it's double acting, you're getting impulses on both pistons every time a compound engine runs. You're actually getting, you know, the equivalent of a four-cylinder compound all total would have the same effective power generation as a 16-cylinder internal combustion engine. So you had tremendous amounts of power being released.
Who would repair these cars? Would it be the factory? I mean, there wasn't that many of them made. You know, usually when there's a, since like today, you have dealers. You had dealerships back then. Did they go? What was the original count? You said about 40 cars total.
40 cars over the entire life of the company from like 1910 up to 31.
So, I mean, you don't just give, the Warshinskis or J.C. Whitney's or somebody, just kidding, give them a call and say, I need some parts. They had to go back to the factory and have only one or two people work on these cars, no matter where they were located.
Well,
right?
I would imagine that, a lot of them were kept local. I don't imagine you had a wide distribution network if you only produced 40 cars, but they did get to Europe. They did get to New Zealand and Australia. He had business interests. One of his brothers moved to Australia. So there were a few of them abroad in both Europe and in the South Atlantic. I would imagine that it was a rather specialized thing, but the engines would have been able to be worked on because steam engines were very simple in principle, and that it's the boiler and the other mechanisms that drive people nuts. And there are no two Doble steam cars that are the same. He, being a genius, he changed things and improved things constantly, and every car had his fingerprints all over it, and he was constantly upgrading things and changing things, and no two cars left the factory with the same components. So they're impossible to duplicate. You have to make things from scratch.
Well, that's a good point, because I believe Abner was a perfectionist. Isn't that correct?
Oh, absolutely.
He was a genius. He was a perfectionist, and everything had to go, and luckily he got anything done. But I believe that was also one of the detriments of the company himself.
Oh, yeah.
He wouldn't even want to... He would tinker with that car, because every 5 minutes he'd want to make it better, and therefore he never sold any, and didn't want to sell it.
Yeah, it was more of an engineering exercise and a hobby than a business. I mean, it couldn't have succeeded the way that it was structured, because he had his hands on everything. There was no management strategy. It was basically just make it and put out the best product you can. And they were a car that literally lasted forever. There's one of the surviving Dobles. Now they're only about a grand total of 15 carcasses included in existence today, and there are only about six of them that are operational, two of which Jay Leno owns. And
I think Stan Lucas does. That is one of the names
that I saw when I was doing some research on this. There are only a couple of them out there. There's a picture that exists of four of them in a row that was taken back in the 60s. They were at the time all the functioning Dobles in the world at the time. There is one in England that has been in England since the beginning. It's a Model E, which was their final configuration that they produced any of. There was a Model F, but that didn't see any real production. The Model E was pretty much the ultimate steam car ever made, and luckily the survivors are for the most part Model E's. All the ones you'll ever see pictures of are Model E's, let's put it that way. There's one in England that actually has 600,000 miles on it, and it's seen nothing but ordinary maintenance. I would imagine ordinary maintenance includes boiler work. Steam engines literally run forever. I mean, there are steam engines that have been running for 100 years or more. They don't tend to wear out. You wear out bearings, but you pour a new Babbitt at bearings. I had the opportunity to buy a steam engine a few years ago that had been running continuously for 95 years in a leather shop, all you do is pour new bearings and you got a running engine. They're very simple and they run forever. Doble made a phenomenal car. The way he put it, the Model E was more flexible than a Packard or a Cadillac. It was quieter than a Rolls Royce and more powerful than a Hispano Suiza. In short, he was basically telling the world that he was making the ultimate motor car, so drive steam.
Well, speaking of the ultimate motor car, let's go back to price, size. And of course, we know that the special, you know, special people ordered them. But you know, give us an idea on some price and the size of these vehicles.
Okay. Size-wise, they were a grand car. They were never less than about 135-inch wheelbase. They were a big car. They were in the same size league as, you know, a large Packard, a Lincoln, a Rolls, a Winton, you know, any of the big cars. The last generation of them had 140, I think 42 or 43 inch wheelbase, the Model E. It was a very big car. Chassis alone, the base price on a chassis was $6,800 in 1923, when a Winton was about $4,500. It was comparable in price to a Duesenberg, a Rolls Royce, you know, and any of the supercars of the day. And when you put a body on it, they were coach built. They didn't build their own bodies. A lot of the bodies were built by Murphy in Pasadena, which is a lucky thing because Murphy was an excellent coach builder, did a lot of Duesenbergs and a lot of other big name American cars, top end coach builder. And by the time you were done, you could easily have 20,000 or even more in some cases in a car.
This is very true, and you know, I was just looking here at something that Model E Roadster, a Doble Roadster that Jay Leno owns.
Yes,
that is number 20, and that was owned by Howard Hughes.
Correct. Howard Hughes had two Doble steam cars. Now, Howard Hughes was a brilliant engineer. Here's another guy. This guy was a businessman, but he was also an engineer, and he was good at both. This was a man that did both very well, and he was fascinated by Doble steam cars. He owned Duesenbergs, he owned Rolls Royces, and he owned Dobles. And the Doble was the thing that he loved the most, and he started tinkering with them. And one of the two Dobles that he owned, now whether it's Jay Leno's or it's the other one, both of them still exist. The one that Leno has in the late 80s, I know, sold for about $300,000 back then, and it was green at the time. Now it's red, and it got acquired by the Nethercutt Collection, and he bought it from the Nethercutt Collection. But Howard Hughes tinkered with it, and one of the cars that he had, by the time he was done with it, bore little or no mechanical resemblance to what it started out life as. Now, whether that was the one that Leno has or not, I don't know. I kind of doubt it, but he absolutely loved the car. That was his favorite car, and he had Duesenberg. So, I mean, it says a lot for it, because he was a playboy, he was a fast runner, and he liked power. That's what he liked about the Duesenbergs. They had a lot of guts and get up and go. And the Doble, quite frankly, put everything else to shame. Just to give you an idea, as far as power goes, the modern car, the electric car out there, the Tesla, they have this new one out there that's got this insane mode that pegs you to the back of your seat. It's got 687 foot-pounds of torque, which for an automobile is phenomenal. Well, a Doble had 1,100 to 1,200 foot-pounds of torque. I mean, blow it out the road. It twice the torque that a Tesla has.
And you're dealing with pressure. You're looking at about 7,000 pounds of pressure in those boilers, and you're just releasing it to go. I mean, that's like taking a cap off of a whatever you want to call it. You know, you look at an air tank, and you just pop the tank off, and that thing can fly up into the stratosphere.
Oh, yeah.
That's what these cars were like, you know.
Well, the boilers were pressure tested to 7,000 PSI, but they ran at about 750. up to about
7,000, then you'd be going real fast.
They got them up to about 1,500 PSI. A racing Stanley would be at about 1,600 PSI, but Doble was capable of doing about 1,500 PSI and still running safely. Their standard operating pressure was between 750 and 1,200 PSI. If you were really doing something, you could put it up to 1,200 PSI. And even if something happened, you'd only lose about a quart of steam, and you wouldn't be in any trouble.
And you wouldn't burn out either. You'll just go. I mean, you know, when you're mechanically torquing like that, I mean, your rear wheels are spinning. This thing just goes, right? I mean, you can't picture this burnout. You're just flying.
Absolutely. I mean, when you think about this, I mean, this car in 1923 had well over twice the torque of an F-350, you know, an F-350 diesel. I mean, this thing's just unbelievably powerful, you know, and that's why, you know, steam trains, you had one locomotive on a steam train hauling, you know, 100 cars of coal. And, you know, nowadays you got 10 diesel electrics pulling, or 6 diesel electrics pulling a freight train full of, you know,
Well, good old days, good old days. Well, you know, it's we got about another 15 minutes worth of the show here, and I just wanted to, we had a guest here a few weeks ago, Tim Simonson.
Yes.
And he collects a lot of old records, and he enjoyed some of the music that we played, and I think we're going to play a song. Tim, if you're listening, this song is for you. We're going to take a little bit of a break here, and you're listening to WOBC Oberlin, 91.5 FM, and this is Bernie Goliath, your host of the Auto Air, and our guest tonight is Roy Pacini, and this song is going out to Jim Simonson.
Ah, there's that horn now. You know I'm wild about horns on automobiles that go ta-ta-ta-ta. I don't know what there is about one, but you can't get a girl without one. I ain't had a girlfriend for many a night. Since I got that bugle, I'm doing all right. I'm wild about horns on automobiles that go ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta.
Once again, Bernie Goliath here, your host for the Auto Era, and this is WOBC 91.5 FM Oberlin College and Community Radio, and tonight's guest is Roy Pacini, and we're talking about the Doble steam car and whatever else comes up that's exciting and interesting. But we got a few more minutes left, so we're going to finish up on a Doble steam car. And if you want to try to get in on the phone anyway and ask a question, it's 440-775-8139. So, Roy, take it away.
What's up, Doble? Well, getting back to the Model E Doble and people that owned them, Howard Hughes was probably the most famous American that was involved with it. But a little known fact is that one of the ones that made its way to Europe was during the Nazi regime, confiscated, and went to Reichsmarshal Goering. And Hermann Goering owned and enjoyed a Doble steam car. And obviously, you don't see it in pictures because they weren't really wild about showing Nazis using American-made machinery. But he was a closet Doble fan, apparently. The Model E, just as a matter of prestige, when they went to demonstrate, people, they used to do things like races and hill climbs and such to demonstrate the power of cars. The torque was so immense on a steam car. They used to put the gasoline cars to shame in hill climbs. What Abner Doble did at one point, he picked one of the steepest mountain roads possible. It had a 27% grade, and that's for every 1 foot, for every 4 feet that you go forward, it's going up 1 foot. So it's rising 1 foot for every 4 feet of progression. And he took this vehicle up full throttle to the center of the hill and stopped dead and did not use any brakes. He just stopped it dead and held it there in position for several minutes, just using the power of steam that was in the cylinders, just held it absolutely motionless. Then he opened up the steam valve and took off for the top of the hill and made it to the top of the hill doing a steady 25 miles an hour on a 27% grade. He turned around at the top of the hill and started downward, used absolutely no brakes. He put the car in reverse because you can shift a steam car into reverse, and it will slowly cycle the engine, and it will act in a braking capacity, which is the way a steam train would stop. They'd throw it in reverse and reverse the wheels. Well, they would use the power to slow it down. Doble went down the entire hill at a 27% grade using nothing but steam braking. And when he got to the bottom of the hill after that, if that wasn't good enough, he turned around and did 40 miles an hour from the bottom of the hill to the top of the hill and basically took his hat off and said, "Top that."
Well, that was probably one of the most... did he get any publicity?
Oh, yes. Yeah, got plenty of publicity. But unfortunately, once again, he wasn't a businessman, and stock traders did him in. After about 1924, there were a lot of lawsuits, and the stock traders from the outside would buy stock and sell it short. And this is before the crash of 29. And they basically kept him a rather poor man for the last years of his existence in business. From about 1924 to 31, they hardly made any cars at all. I mean, out of a total production of 40 cars, slowing down production really had to be down to nothing. They basically made very few things during those years, and they were unable to recover and went out of business. But prior to that, there was also something else that Doble made that doesn't receive a lot of publicity, but he made some prototypes for a couple of different companies. Two different companies, the Holt Manufacturing Company, which is a big manufacturer of tractors, and they also made tanks, decided to make a prototype military tank using Doble engines. And they did make it, and it did function, but they never went into production of it. Also, the United States Corps of Engineers decided that they would try to make a steam tank for their own purposes, and they were financed by, of all things, the Endicott Johnson Shoe Company. And they produced a couple of prototypes which functioned. They weighed about 50 tons apiece, and they were powered by two Doble designed steam car engines, and they also never went into production. And after Doble ceased automobile production, he went to England, and he worked for a company called Sentinel, which made steam-powered trucks. They used a lot of steam-powered trucks for decades after the demise of steam as far as automobiles goes. In England, they use steam-powered trucks. They call them lorries. And he went to work for them and designed engines over there and finished out his career, as an engineer working for Sentinel. And he lived to be 66 years old, and he died in 1961 out in Santa Rosa, California.
You know, you were talking about these tanks. They were big machines, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. 50 tons. 50, that's 100,000
pounds. Moving something that big of a mass with a steam engine at that time.
It's quite a feat.
No doubt.
I'd like to know what their boiler looked like, personally. They had to have some kind of hellacious boiler to move that kind of, to generate that kind of steam, and also had to be hot inside the tank. I wouldn't want to be one of the soldiers trying to pilot the thing. It had to be unbearable, you know.
Well, you know, our show's coming down to the close here pretty soon, but we have about two or three more shows left for this season. And I believe next week we may have Dave Buehler back on talking about Templar. And I think what we may want to do here in the next 2 weeks or so, maybe the second or third show from now, I think it would be nice to have Roy back on, maybe Dave Buehler, maybe a few other people, and we'll have just a sort of a jam session of conversation regarding old cars. And I think that would be something of interest to everybody. That way you'll have a quite eclectic group, and it would be focused on our topic of Cleveland-made and Northern Ohio-made automobiles. And I think we still want to get into some of the other specialty ones that we haven't really even spent much time on, which is a Jordan. There will be a Jordan at that show at Ursuline. You may want to come down and see that. And, of course, Peerless. We haven't gotten into too much about Peerless. They'll also be down there. And you know, when you get into these other unique cars, of course, they were very popular and they were for the wealthy, especially when you're talking about Peerless. Well, but, go, Roy.
Well, for people that are interested in going to the show is also the national meet for the Peerless Club, which would probably bring quite a number of excellent automobiles back to Cleveland, and you know, who knows what else might show up. I also am under the impression that they're bringing back some of the family members of some of the descendants of the people that actually made the cars here in Northern Ohio, which would be quite a treat for people to meet them and, you know, get their pictures taken with some of the people.
Oh yeah, well, Winton will obviously be here.
Yay.
There's some Winton people, they still live in Cleveland. Stearns, I think there's still one or two alive. And of course, it depends on how many are coming. But it'll be a great celebration, and I think that's something to keep in mind and put down on your calendar. I think here next week we'll probably give a little bit of talk of, we had conversations regarding Rocky River and Lakewood. There's so much here in Oberlin. We had guests here in the past. We talked about Oberlin and how this college area got financed through the Jewett family. So you see a lot of this interesting history here. But Roy, thanks a lot for coming, and we're going to definitely have you back on the show here in the very, very near future.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yes, and Cavs won today, so that's even good. So that's good news. They're in the playoffs, and they won their first game today. I've always historically ended the show with the Beatles, Come Drive My Car. And it's that time of year where you should get in those antique cars, drive them, have fun with them, show them around, and, talk some history, because that is that's a moving billboard of historical significance is your old car.
Grow the hobby.
That's right. Grow the hobby and enjoy your day, enjoy the week, and we'll talk to you next week.